Welcome to the 2-4 2015. We did it. Happy New Year to all our listeners. Zach Vanosh, Sean O'Neill, here on this January 2nd, 2015. What are we looking at? Good 2015, Sean?
So far, so good.
Oh, God.
Which would be unfortunate if that wasn't
the case. Yeah, 36 hours in. I'm glad.
Yeah. It's been a good 36 hours. I'm not going to lie.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
How did you ring in 2015?
Pretty quiet. I was back home in Quebec and took it pretty easy.
Take her easy.
Yeah.
I was just telling you before we started, 2 bottles of champagne and a horrible January 1st. But it was all good, as we were saying. It's a good day to recover. Just sit around watching Winter Classic and then football all day.
Yeah, it's not bad.
What did you think of this year's Winter Classic?
It was weird, like... Don't you feel that there's way less hype this year than ever has been?
By far the least hyped Winter Classic I've ever.
And I don't know if that's fatigue setting in. I don't know if it's because they made that insane decision not to run 24/7 on HBO. I don't know what it was.
I think that was a part of it. Because did you watch any of the other program?
No, I didn't.
Nor did I.
I think that was part of it. You know, the Caps aren't world beaters. Maybe that was part of it, but yeah, there was just way less buzz this year. The game was fine. It was a good game. It was a fun game.
It was a good game. And we were reminded Alex Ovechkin plays in the NHL still.
Yeah. But I kind of had to continuously remind myself over the past 2 weeks that, oh yeah, the Winter Classic's coming up. Like, usually I'm pretty excited for it, and this year was kind of an afterthought.
Yeah. Still, decent hangover. Waste of time.
Absolutely.
It's an event game. At least I can sit there watching, you know, flicking through Twitter and watching it, well, slowly dying.
Yeah, I don't think it's going anywhere, but I think even the ratings, I think, were lower than...
They were very low.
As well.
Yeah, I think that's the HBO thing, too. I really think that hurt them.
I never understood that, and you would think next year they'll have gotten by whatever it was that was... Whatever they'd talked themselves into, I don't think they'll make that mistake 2 years in a row.
We'll find out. HBO might tell them to go screw themselves now, though.
Yeah, I suppose. Who knows?
So before we get into the program proper... Got to give our normal plug to rabbithabs.com, which will soon be the site of the forum, which you may know from the montrealbias.com. It will continue to be on the montrealbias.com, where you found this podcast, and as well will now be featured on rabbithabs.com. So that's just the kind of constant content accumulation they got going on over there. It's a plethora of Habs-related news and information for you. Let's crack open this 12-pack, the first of 2015. Start off question number one for you, Sean. Lars Eller, Alex Galchenyuk, Thomas Plekanec, Max Pacioretty, and Brendan Gallagher, all on pace for 20-plus goal seasons. In what order do you see them finishing?
Well, first things first, I wish I'd looked this up. I just kind of thought about it. But, you know, we're not a great goal-scoring team. There can't be a ton of teams that have 5 players on pace for 20-plus goal seasons.
It's not something you see too frequently. I'm sure the top teams probably all have guys in who are at least smelling 20 plus right now. But no, I don't think it's...
I mean, for Montreal, a team that's in the bottom third of the league in terms of goals scored, it's a little unexpected, but I guess it's a top-heavy team.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the guys who, on the other end of the spectrum, it's like one for one or two. Malhotra's still zero.
Yes, he is. I think, this is a quasi-bold prediction, I think Galchenyuk leads the team in scoring this year.
He's gonna eclipse Maxwell.
Yeah, he is. I think the emergence has started, and I think I would not be surprised to see him go on sort of a torrid pace in the second half of the season.
That first line, I know we talked about it the last couple podcasts, but so much fun to watch. Confidence out the ass from that first line right now. Their passes, they look like they're drooling at the opportunity to score every time they're out there.
There's probably some recency bias here, but off the top of my head, that might be the best Habs line of my lifetime. Which isn't
even back to like your lifetime, like 1985.
Well, okay, of my hockey viewing conscious lifetime.
So say post 2011.
Yeah. Let's best line of the Molson/Bell Center era. Let's put it that way.
That's fair.
Off the top of my head, at least. I think Galchenyuk leads the team. I've got Pacioretty in second, Gallagher in third. Plekanec's fourth, and I think Eller is probably fifth out of that group of five.
Yeah, I went even less. I was very unbold. I had it Max, Chucky, Galley, Plecky, Lars.
Yeah.
Not very exciting, but I was wondering.
Well, I mean, it makes sense, though. You know, you don't have to go crazy with this. That's probably how most people would slot him.
I got Lars, and then Malhotra. Makes a big comeback. Speaking of the 20-goal mark for question two, Jiří Sikač currently on pace for 17. Can he join them in the 20 category?
He might even hit 25 the way he's playing.
For real?
Yeah.
You're buying in.
I'm really. He's been so impressive the last 12 to 20 games, whatever it's been.
So you
he looks really, really good, and he's on pace for 17, but he got off to a slow start.
Very slow. I mean, he wasn't.
If you sort of take that out, I mean, obviously those games still count. That still counts towards his goals per game pace, but. The way he's been playing since he sort of hit his stride, this is his first season. He's only 22. He's getting more minutes. He's getting, you know, sort of better line combinations. He's playing really well. 25 might be a stretch, but I think he hits 22, 23.
So you're changing your mind. You're flip-flopping on your evaluation after two games that he was going to be a bust.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's exactly what I said.
You said this guy is a waste of our goddamn time.
the growing pains are well behind him. He is a legit top six forward, I think. He looks good.
Talented. Can't get the puck away from him. No, he's been very good. He's been our best forward the last few games.
Yeah, yeah.
And you brought up, previous to us recording this thing, and it's funny because I was thinking about it too. There's turmoil in New Jersey right now.
There's something in New Jersey.
There's something in New Jersey.
God.
Something weird going on in New Jersey. Obviously, Lou Lamoriello looking for a shakeup. You suggested the all-check line for the Habs.
I did.
Which would, of course, require bringing in one Jaromír Jágr.
It's been rumored for so long. Yeah. He's going to be on the block. They're going to be sellers. We are going to be buyers. You know Bergevin likes to wheel and deal. If you want to add a piece, man, I know he's old, but that's a pretty nice piece to add for a cup run.
He and Sikač on a line together with Plex, that could be very interesting.
I mean, the three of them have noted chemistry together, at least on the international stage.
And I can just see, I mean, with the Sikač's ability, it seems to really control the puck when he's in trouble. And Jágr, despite losing his step, still has that. Plex is just
he might
a
be
great
the best
playmaker.
Ever there.
Yeah, exactly. That's an experiment I'd at least enjoy watching.
Yeah. I mean those three guys, you cannot get the puck off any of their sticks.
No, Jagger's only got 6 goals so far this season, but for a New Jersey team that, you know, something very weird is going on there. And so yeah, Jagger's 43 and he's probably not even going to hit 15 goals this season. But maybe if the chemistry is right with Plex and Sikač on the all-check line, it'd be worth exploring as a trade option.
I would think so. Yeah, I mean, listen, the end might be near for Jágr, and I'm not saying I'd give up 2 first-round picks for him, but...
One?
You know, he's clearly in the stage of his career where he's kind of floating from team to team, and he'd like to win that one last cup, and New Jersey's clearly in sell mode.
Yeah.
And you would think, I mean, he's been rumored to be coming to Montreal so many times, you would think Montreal would be sort of on the short list.
Like, I'm probably pushing this more than I need to because I've just always been a big Jágr fan and would like to see him with the Habs.
Yeah, that's I mean, who wouldn't want to, you know?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to see Jeremy Jaeger on their team at this point in his career?
What a chance. I think we've talked about this before, but this is a guy who really transformed his career.
Yep.
Everyone loves Jaeger now, and he was like the NHL's leading villain for a while.
Yeah, he really was. I mean, those Washington years were, you know, who knows what happened, but it really did seem like he kind of mailed it in. But it seems like that trip to the KHL kind of rejuvenated him. As much as we like to look at his career stats and say, like, imagine what would happen if he'd been there for those 2 years, I don't know if the end of his career is the same if he doesn't have that little sojourn to Siberia.
Going back to the USSR will remind you of some things about how great it is to be an NHL star, I think.
Yeah, no kidding.
Move us ahead here.
Number three, switching gears completely, which player has impressed you the most at the World Juniors?
It's got to be Domi, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's looked, I don't know where his stock was, I don't know where the experts had him ranked prior to this tournament, but wherever it was, unless it's number three.
He's a top 10 pick.
Yeah, he's top 10, but I think he's moved at least, he might be number three now.
Well, I mean, he's already been drafted, though.
Oh, well, I don't know what I'm talking about then.
But I think
he's Phoenix. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, he's a Phoenix property, but he has been fantastic. And, you know, most goons were pretty talented players as youngsters, so I don't know what Ty Domi's skill level was, but man, is his kid good.
Yeah. Better than Ty, I believe. I'm going to come out and say it. I think he's better than Ty.
He has been fantastic. He has been so much fun to watch. 12th overall, so he actually wasn't a top 10 pick. That's, you know, looking like a relative steal at this point. And we've seen all sorts of players look fantastic at the tournament and not really turn into a whole lot. But, you know, you remember this guy. Like, we remember this guy in junior. Like, he was pretty hyped from the beginning, and maybe he slid to 12th. Maybe he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he's been so much fun to watch.
Better than, he's looked better than Eichel, and I'd even say Connor.
Yeah, I would say so.
He's older as well, so you obviously have to factor that in there. Speaking of players who have
Reinhardt
shined at the World,
too,
oh yeah, he's been. He was one that I was pretty aware of. Well, obviously not that aware of Domi. I forgot for a second he was drafted by the Arizona Coyotes, but that's what Arizona does to you. He's Reinhardt. I didn't know much about, and he's really one that suddenly I've been paying attention to since the tournament began.
Yep, and you know, if Buffalo's been a little bit better than expected, but if you're able to team up him and McDavid, that's a pretty nice core.
I don't think they're going to get McDavid in Buffalo.
I don't really think they will either. You know, even if it's Reinhardt and Eichel or whatever it is, like he's a building block. He's a really nice player. I mean, second overall pick. It's not a shock.
How have you? I mean, obviously Canada at this point, when we're doing this thing, is 4-0 at this tournament, but and we'll better be 5-0 by the time today rolls out. But you've been enjoying the tournament overall?
Sure, and I know it's unfair to say gold or bust, but even though we haven't won it in 5 years, we do this in the round robin every year.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to get
so,
too excited.
Yeah, it's been fun. I mean, I always love the tournament. It's really fun hockey, but the fact that we're undefeated and in first place so far doesn't tell me a whole lot, because that's kind of par for the course.
Yeah. And I mean, we've beat the States in the round robin plenty, and yeah, when it came to the big games, lost to them again. So I'm not overexcited yet about. I mean, they played well.
They look fantastic. I'm not trying to rain on their parade. They look great, but fair or unfair, it really is gold or bust for these guys.
It's fair. It's Canada's hockey.
Yeah, I think so.
It's the one that's. It's what we do. I've enjoyed. You know what? I've mostly enjoyed the teams that have no chance of winning. The Swiss and the Danes have been a lot of fun to watch, and just, you know, from those teams in that kind of B level, there used to be the C level teams. The C level teams kind of competed this year with those B level teams.
Yeah, there's been a little more parity than usual, I think. The Danes have been especially fun to watch for some weird reason.
I think it's because their goalie's really tiny and looks like he's 8 years old and very excited. And they're the Danes. I mean, they'd never won a game before and then had that awesome, awesome victory. And, you know, it's so great when, you know, Canada's gold or bust, and that's all that matters. And then you see this team getting its first ever win, and everyone's crying on the bench, and it's just so emotional. And all they did was win a round robin game. It's like, all right, there's everyone's got their different levels of victory in this tournament. But yeah, as I was alluding to, Tokarski, one of the heroes of World Juniors in the past, had a decent start for the Habs. Can he be a starter in the NHL? That's question four.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's got the pedigree and he's been successful at every stop so far, but we do need to keep in mind that there's been a ton of goalies.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe even the majority of goalies in the league who've looked good as backups who couldn't cut it as starters.
I would say so.
There's a big difference between being able to, you know, going in 15, 20 games a year, sometimes against sort of secondary opponents and, you know, mop up duty and kind of getting the job done, as opposed to playing 65 games a year and being the guy. I'm not saying Tokarski can't do it, but, you know, the fact that he's looked serviceable, or better than serviceable, the fact that he's looked good through the first, whatever, 20 starts in his career isn't really mean a whole lot. But that being said, he was a successful junior goalie. He's been, you know, had success at the AHL level. Like, it's not like this came out of nowhere. Montreal seemed to buy pretty low on him and get a good deal. But, I'm not, you know, if I was a GM from an opposing team, I wouldn't be selling the farm to get him just because he's looked good in relief.
No, a lot of guys can. I mean, look at Peter Budaj. Peter Budaj, fantastic in relief. But, you know, when he was given a stretch of starts last season, you saw why he wasn't an NHL starter. He just doesn't seem to have it for one reason or another. I'm not saying Tokarski doesn't. I just, I'm not going to go ahead and declare him a future NHL starter for a team. What he's probably going to be is a 1B. Maybe he can be a 1A. But I see, you know, likely where he winds up most of his career is maybe splitting work, being a not a controversy, but you know what I mean, one of these conversation goalies in a city that's struggling to find a starting goaltender. Well, he'll get, you know, 40 of the starts or so, but might not necessarily be the guy. Now, maybe he's not, but I don't know. It's not like I've seen enough from him to say, holy shit, this guy obviously has the pedigree. Whereas I think we saw that with Carey Price.
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, he was the fifth pick overall. But yeah, Tokarski looks good, but yeah, there's been so many guys in that position. I think you're right. I think he probably slots in as a part-time starter, a pretty decent goalie, but, you know, I think fan bases have a tendency to overrate young goalies and backup goalies, and I think we're, you know, there's a portion of the Habs fan base that's doing that with Tokarski right now.
And I was looking back, I mean, they were showing some of the previous World Junior teams, and kind of what you were talking to a minute ago, a lot of those starters for the junior teams who won gold wound up being, you know, backup goalies and starter for a few years, then bounced around between backup and starter. I mean, the 1B position seems to be what a lot of these guys end up being, besides, you know, your obvious, Carey Price being the most obvious of them, I guess, and Marc-Andre Fleury and other.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Price is almost a rarity. Like, you think that goalie is going to, the backstop to gold is going to go on to be a Vezina Trophy winner. But yeah, most of them are kind of, I mean, you know, Justin Pogge, remember him? Like, most of them are kind of, don't really turn out to be that much.
Yeah, it was like Dan Cloutier. I mean, he was a starter for a while, but was he ever, no.
Not a very good one.
No, exactly. Sounds like we're more down on Tokarski than we mean to, I think.
It's not that I'm down on him, I'm just, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Let's wait and see before we crown his ass.
You want to crown him, then crown his ass. He started Game 6 of an Eastern Conference Final. What more can you ask?
It's true.
He's got the experience. Some moving and shaking happening in the NHL.
Yeah, about what, an hour ago, David Perron off to Pittsburgh in exchange for a first-round pick?
Yeah, I picked up Perron in my fantasy pool. He was available because I think his numbers are about to get better.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's from the same neck of the woods that we hail from.
Canton Lest represent.
That's right, buddy. Some trivia for the listeners.
About us or about...
Just general knowledge.
You can take that with you, folks. So that's a good deal for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, they need players. He's good. He's a nice player. And first round pick seems a little high off the top of my head, but it's going to be
29th.
Yeah. So it's probably fair. And yeah, they just need guys who can put the puck in the net. Because they, as we said 1,000 times in this, you know, they are wasting the prime of one of the 5 or 10 greatest players of all time.
I think bringing Perron in, and so he's going to slot in either beside Malkin or Crosby. And seeing the guys that, you know, the spare tires who have slotted in beside both of those guys over the years, and the success that nobody seemed to have, Perron's a decent to good player, I would say. And so I think, you know, he must be delighted about this trade.
Yeah, to be going from
Edmonton to Pittsburgh? I thank you. He's the one that wins. What about Edmonton? I mean, it's another first round. It's more rebuild in Edmonton. But they have to. I mean, I know, but Jesus.
I know. I mean, if this is, I assume this is not their only move. So if this is the start of many moves, if this is the start of something, then okay, sure. If they think that shipping David Perron out for a first round pick is all they have to do.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if that's what they think is the sad part.
Yeah, I know. And he was, you know, apparently one of the very few guys on the roster who wasn't okay with losing.
That's why they had to get rid of him.
Yeah, maybe.
This guy seems very upset with where we're headed. We'll bring in another rookie who doesn't seem to mind. Just thinks it's how it is in Edmonton.
Yeah, no, I know. It's, you know, you assume there are moves to come following this, but who the hell knows with those guys?
MB, give a ring-a-ding-a-ding-a. Reunite Yak and Galley. Or Chucky.
Man, you would be buying solo on Yakupov for a guy who led all rookies in scoring a couple years back and was the consensus number one pick.
Yeah, I think there's some value still in Yakupov. Maybe get him out of a losing situation. Get him with Galchenyuk, a good positive influence.
And the worry with him was always that he was going to jump to the KHL, but I don't know if anyone's doing that now.
No, God, no. KHL's going to struggle for the next few years, I think, to draw any NHLers over.
Yeah, and I mean, that Edmonton situation is just such a disaster.
My God.
For everyone. Like, he has, you know, some of the complaints against him have been legit, but I almost don't blame anyone for anything that happens in Edmonton anymore, the players-wise. Like,
yeah.
I think him and all those guys, if you get them out of there, they're going to do some stuff if they're playing on an organization that's actually run properly, you know?
Well, that's what I'm worried about for the Oilers is, so they're in their attempt to rebuild once more, retool maybe, since everyone's so young, is they're going to ship these guys at way below value, and all of them are going to go out and have, you know, just haunting success on their new teams. I mean, Perron's not one of the, I don't, you know, if that's their move, that's ridiculous because they got to do something more than that. Perron obviously going to have success, in my opinion, in Pittsburgh simply because of who he'll be playing with. But I could see the same. I mean, Taylor Hall could ride, you know, pass Tyler Seguin again easy on the right team. Nugent Hopkins, I mean, sure. This guy's pretty much invisible this season. And Yak, I think you put him on the right team. This, you know, he's going to end up being what we thought he was going to be.
Yep. Not only have they not built a winning team, but they've quasi-sabotaged the value of all their young assets on their team. I don't think it's I don't think it's irreparable. I think these guys can repair their careers, but not in Edmonton. And they're not going to be getting, like you said, they're not going to be getting the return they should be on these guys because their value is so diminished because that's such a dysfunctional organization.
It's just impressive. I mean, even Leafs fans feel bad for them right now.
Yeah, it's something else. This is getting about as bad as I can remember for a franchise.
Oh, yeah. The Islanders, even at their worst, were not this. You know, because the Islanders, once they got some of those picks and did some, you know, it took a long time to get over old idiot GM and the massive hole that he built for them. Once they were past that and had a few more idiot GMs, you know, and got those assets, now we're seeing the New York Islanders start to play some decent hockey. But the assets quickly piled up in Edmonton, and we're almost in negative progress for that team now.
Oh, yeah, they're going backwards, which is almost impossible.
It is. I mean, it really is. What a mess.
And, I mean, you know, I guess Pittsburgh before Crosby was probably the lowest
of the
lows that I've ever seen. But that only and I mean, the team was almost about to move as well. But they were making progress, and it only lasted 3 or 4 seasons, where it seems like this has been going on for 10 years now.
Yeah, they've pretty much been in this decline since they lost to Carolina in the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, basically. I know they say they're only in year 3 of the rebuild or whatever it is, and that they kind of stumbled into it or whatever, but
that's kind of bullshit.
The team's been basically been sliding backwards for 8 straight years now.
That's depressing. You mentioned dysfunction, and I got to ask about number 6 here. What the hell is Lou Lamoriello doing?
Man.
For those who missed it, to bring him up to date.
For those who missed it, on Boxing Day, Lou Lamoriello decided to give Pete DeBoer the pink slip. Not, you know, probably a lot of people saw that coming. The team was probably underachieving. I think DeBoer is a good coach, but anyways, he's gone. protocol, or not even protocol, sort of standard operating procedure when you fire a coach is to name a new coach, an interim coach, one coach. That's not how Lou Lamoriello does business. Scott Stevens is a coach. Adam Oates is a coach. And Lou Lamoriello is heading downstairs to coach the team as well. So they have a three-headed triumvirate that's going to be leading this team for the rest of the season.
Lou Lamoriello is not a conventional man.
Nope.
And he's made some... I mean, I think more than anyone else in the NHL right now, he's probably had more of an impact on the way the game is played. But this is way outside the box, as far as I know.
Yeah.
It might work. I mean, who the hell... I'm dubious as well, but I'm, you know, let's give him the benefit of the doubt.
I don't know. It's tough. Like, if it was, it would be one thing if it was, you know, Mike Milbury had done this, or the Oilers had done this, but like, this is one of the greatest GMs in NHL history is making this move. And it's really starting to look like he's lost his fastball.
It seems desperation to you?
It doesn't even, not even desperation, just I can't explain it. I don't understand it. And I know the team made that cup run in 2012, but this is a team that hasn't really been run properly for basically since the lockout.
So that would, I mean, by that, we're saying Lou's lost it, right?
Well, look at the roster. It's all 40-year-old forwards and draft picks that haven't panned out. And I guess that part of that's what happens when you draft 23rd every year. But it's not a good roster. They haven't handled the salary cap well. Lamoriello has not been as good in a salary cap NHL as he was in whatever it was before the salary cap.
Yep.
And it's tough to say because, like I said, he's one of the greatest GMs in NHL history. But, you know, he lost Parise. He lost Kovalchuk. He signed a lot of weird guys to weird contracts. And... you know, didn't adapt well, I think, to the realities of the post-lockout NHL and now this, which I really don't get it.
The roster is really something, and we talked about this early in this season. Forget who it was who alluded to New Jersey as the... they look like the team that your buddy who didn't make the fantasy just left his auto-draft on picked. And I love watching New Jersey because that's exactly what it is. I mean, they've had injury problems this season as well.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's barely been an NHL roster out there, but it's just a collection of, oh, that's where that guy is.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
The whole team you didn't know played for New Jersey, essentially. Not even Marty Brodeur is there anymore. That was their last bit of identity. They're a bizarre team now, and I don't see how having three head coaches
works
exactly. I mean, maybe there's enough veterans on that team that they just figure...
No, I mean, even if you give Lamoriello...
What are we giving Lamoriello?
You know, even if, you know, maybe I'm being too hard on him, like, even if you want to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, you know, this team was in the final not too long ago, he got Schneider, like, he's made some good moves, I don't know how this works.
I have no idea.
I can't possibly conceive of how this works, having three head coaches, or no head coaches, or whatever it is they're doing.
What is it officially? No head coaches?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I know one of them's in charge of defense. One of them's in charge of forwards. I don't know what the third's in charge of. Power play? I think Adam Oates is in there for the special teams.
I mean, I think you... don't you have to have a head coach on the game sheet?
I don't know the NHL protocol on the game sheets.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I can't even, you know, really describe what they're doing, but it's not going to work.
No. I don't really see this as watch out for New Jersey now.
Well, no.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, it's strange to see. It's too bad.
Kick us forward, I guess.
That brings us to number 7. What is your preferred New Year's hockey tradition? Canada versus the USA at the World Juniors or the Winter Classic?
The game I see more is the Winter Classic because sometimes I've got other things I've got to do on New Year's Eve and don't get to see that game, or a place that people don't seem to want to watch that game. I do like Canada-USA, though usually the game doesn't mean much, but it's always a hell of a lot of fun. Of the two games, I enjoyed the Can-US one way more this year. Though the Winter Classic, I like to say I can depend on it to be there for my January 1st hangover, so I do appreciate it for that. And it's a game that, you know, I can say, I can give a reason. Like, oh, I got to watch it. It's a winter classic. And girlfriend has to be like, oh, well, I guess it seems important. It's got a name. Where it's really just an excuse for me to lie on the couch going, oh, God. Eating some Kraft dinner and some chocolate milk like a grown-up.
That sounds pretty fantastic.
It was really great. It really helped. So Dr. Zach recommends for your hangover.
Yeah, I love them both, but I really like that Canada-USA New Year's Eve thing. Like you said, the timing isn't always great. This year it was, because the game was at, what, four or something?
Yeah.
When the tournament's taking place in Russia and the game's, you know, either at 6 in the morning or at midnight, it's not quite so convenient. But I only kind of realized this year that, oh, yeah, this is a thing. We do kind of play them every New Year's Eve, don't we? And it's always a great game, and, you know, passions are always running high, and it's a lot of fun. So I think I'll go with that.
I know in the NHL, obviously, emotion gets the best of players sometimes, but there's something really fun about watching kids with the hormones still flying that they're more likely to get just stupid shit happening. And it kind of makes the game interesting and exciting. Reminds me of when I used to go watch, like, high school hockey and Sejap hockey. Just like, some hotheads running. It's great.
That brings us to number 8. Which team finishes with the worst record in the NHL this season? Carolina, Buffalo, Edmonton, or you can pull a Tortorella and go off the board?
I've got to go with Carolina, because this horse is already deep in the lead. I didn't realize how ingrained Carolina was at this point to the to getting Connor McDavid, but this is a team that has just 24 points this year.
They are a dog shit hockey team.
I mean, Edmonton, you know, also 24 points. So that's really your hot race. But Carolina's terrible. I think it's them that ends up with Connor McDavid, just because that's how this would work out.
Yeah, I mean, as bad as Buffalo's been, you know, Buffalo's been better than we thought they would be. And
which was easy.
Yeah.
If they won a game.
I mean, you look at the standings right now, they're almost as close to sort of being middle of the pack as they are to being in Carolina. Like you said, Carolina's opened up a bit of a lead here.
Well, and Carolina, like, I don't see them even at this point. It's almost going to be difficult for them to win enough games, even, you know, if Buffalo pretty much lost the rest of the season. Like, they're just such a bad team.
They really are.
I can't see them putting together enough points logically to catch Buffalo at this point, no matter how bad Buffalo is.
Yeah, I think it's Edmonton, though.
Just the bottom? They're just going to trade everybody?
Yeah, it's hard to believe that the bottom hasn't fallen out already, but that team looks like it's in a death spiral. Even, like, Carolina, it looks like they're a horrible hockey team, but it looks like they're still, you know, they're a functional horrible hockey team.
Yeah.
Whereas Edmonton's just a tire fire.
Edmonton's a team that hit rock bottom and then just kept digging.
I know. It's crazy. It's nuts. I think this is probably the fourth podcast in a row we've talked about how horrible we are. I mean, every week it just gets worse.
Yep.
And it's going to keep getting worse until they trade, you know, Taylor Hall for 2 second-round picks. And
does that make it better?
Rafi Torres or something. I don't know. No, I mean, I'm saying that every time we think they've hit a new low.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Something else that's bizarre.
Yeah. What about other? Is there another team that you could see entering the race? Or is it a three-horse race now?
I mean, if we were starting the season over, I think there are teams that are as bad as those teams. But like you said, I think those teams have opened up enough of a... Actually, I don't know. Those are three really bad teams.
Yeah.
Arizona's not a heck of a lot better, but at least they've got that system and they, you know, they can kind of...
And they got Domi coming up for them, everybody. Domi's there. I know all about that.
I mean, if this Jersey thing's a complete disaster, they're not... You know, they've only got 2 points more than Buffalo does.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I have a hard time seeing the Devils, even with this idiotic three-headed monster of a coach, I have a hard time seeing the Devils with as the worst team in the league. There is some talent there.
Arizona as well. And those are the only two. I mean, the rest are middle rands, basically. So as far as the bottom of the barrel concerned, I think it's these three teams. And Buffalo's even maybe out of contention at this point. I mean, obviously they could be bad enough. They're the Sabres. Let's not kid ourselves, but they may have made a mistake bringing too much character into that team.
Yeah. Buffalo is a team easily capable of going on like a 12-game losing streak.
Do not be alarmed if that happens. Question 9. As this is our New Year's podcast, do you have a hockey-based New Year's resolution?
I like to think I've done a quasi-decent job over the last year of getting more involved with the fancy stats. I have a better understanding of the analytics than I did a year ago. But when we're doing this in our mansions on January 1st, 2016, I would like to think it's partially because I've delved even deeper into the analytics movement.
Yeah, people get rich off analytics. You're right about that.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the cottage industry. Kind of is in the blocker world, actually. All right, I take it. Decent. Mine is patience. And not just like with the Canadians, but when a trade is made, I'm going to take a little time before I have gut reaction out there to whatever it is that goes down. Too often I immediately go with what just feels like should be my reaction. Don't think about it. I'm going to try and make sure I educate myself further before reacting to things. A little bit of patience for myself. And also, you know, I was preaching this from the beginning of this season, 2014-2015 half season, but so, you know, it all factors into the long view of things. I'm trying not to overreact to single losses or overreact even to winning streaks. Trying to take a long view. The cup's the goal at this point.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it?
No, there's nothing else to be. I mean, that's what there is left to build.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You're right. It's just it's kind of crazy that we've reached that point.
Like a Eastern Conference final, another elimination. That'll be disappointing this season. Last season, exciting.
I don't know about that.
Not disappointing by a full, but we'll feel more, you know, last season it was like, all right, that was great. This season, if we got eliminated at that point again, I think you'd be more upset than you were last season.
It won't feel like we're lucky to be there if we get to that point.
I guess that's a better way of putting it. Let's go with that.
I'm better at this than you are.
I know. I'm trying to catch. It's my New Year's resolution. Get better at podcasting than Sean.
That's a relatively low bar.
Question 10. What was Mark Bergevin's best move of 2014?
Honorable mention goes to getting the biggest name on the trade market for 25 cents on the dollar. Mm-hmm. I'll still stand by that Vanek trade, but best move is signing up the face of your franchise and one of the five best defensemen in the world.
Yeah.
Even if it was for $9 million a season, the Subban contract was the story of the year, and that was his best move.
Yeah, I was going to agree. That's pretty boring. So I'm going to go with the trade. I like the Vanek trade, but long run, what did it mean for us? Not a whole lot. The best as far as building towards Lord Stanley returning to St. Catharines. It's not a huge move, but I think it helps in a lot of ways. I thought the Parenteau for Briere trade was an absolute steal.
Yeah, it's looking that way.
Parenteau, I think we talked about in the last podcast, maybe his numbers aren't what you would hope in terms of regulation goals, but the shootout, he's been money in the bank. You couldn't argue that he's not already worth 2 or 3 points for the team this season.
Yeah, that's fair. I know he's been getting some heat lately because he hasn't been great. But
no, he hasn't impressed. But the shootouts, I mean, he might be extremely, you know, that might be his only tool, but it's a hell of a tool. It's better than having a fighter.
Yes, it is. And he's still one of those guys who he'll probably pot 15 by the end of the season.
He doesn't look bad. He just doesn't look good. No. He's fine.
He looks better than Briere, if nothing else.
Oh, for sure. And I still think, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if Parenteau, come playoffs, has a great first or second round or something. You know what I mean? He's one of those guys who could jump to the forefront at that point. I mean, so was Briere. Briere is 25 years older than him or something like that. Although still looks exactly like he did in his highlights from the World Junior Championships. It's like, oh, Briere hasn't aged a day since 1994. Click us forward.
Number 11, speaking of the year in review, what was your favorite Habs moment of 2014?
I think it's going to remain the same as it was when we asked what the favorite of the 2013-2014 season was, and that would be PK out of the box against the Bruins, going down there and scoring that breakaway goal. That, to me, was still the... When I think back to 2014 Montreal Canadiens, that's a moment I'm going to remember, even more so than the clincher. I mean, obviously, it wouldn't be that Subban goal if they don't go on to beat the Bruins, but... That for me was just, I was at Real Sports in Toronto, and you know the place was obviously packed with Habs fans because Toronto fans don't get to watch playoff games, and the place just blew up, and it almost, it's exaggeration to say, it felt like I was there, but it was certainly better than just sitting in your living room, and for me, that's going to be what I remember.
That was great. His goal in double overtime in game one was also fantastic.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of spicing things up slightly, I will go with the random, crazy, improbable comeback from down 3 goals against Ottawa.
That was really fun.
Just because that was so fun and so weird and came out of nowhere. And
it really did. It's
like, they what? Played like garbage for 56 minutes. We all kind of shrugged our shoulders and wrote it off and said, all right, what, didn't have it tonight, game over. And then out of nowhere, this team just scores 4 goals in about a 5-minute span, including a game winner by Frankie Bouillon, who may have been, you know, our second worst regular player last year. It was crazy.
Bouillon, whose name I heard in Spengler Cup highlights.
Oh, really?
Not playing for Team Canada. Because is he technically American?
I think he has dual citizenship, yeah.
Dual. Other surprise, I didn't know Manny Malhotra could speak French.
Neither did I.
Learned that when they decided to talk to him because he, for the first time, wasn't playing this season. These are the things I learned, just throwing them out there to educate everybody. I also loved the, to be honest, the Vanek trade. In the moment when it happened, that was like, holy crap. I mean, come on. All these years we want the Canadians to do something at trade deadline. Nothing ever happens. This year we got the biggest name. That was fun. I know, and you know what, having Vanek on the team for the stretch was really fun. Remember his hat trick against the Avalanche? I mean, that was great. In the end, it didn't work out. We didn't keep him, and perhaps he underperformed in the playoffs. He continues to kind of underperform, actually. But that was a hell of a moment when we got him. I remember being psyched out of my ass. That's an expression.
Out of your ass.
Psyched right out of my ass. Any others? Look back on fondly. I mean, the Subban signing, I think, was maybe my favorite moment, to be honest.
Yeah, that probably was mine, too.
It was great.
The Pacioretty goal in Game 4 against the Lightning was pretty great.
That was fun. Well, I mean, going to the Eastern Conference, the worst moment had to be the Price injury.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That sucked.
Just to get there for the first, I mean, I know they were there in 2010, but really to get there for the first time in 20 years where it really felt like maybe they could actually win this thing. And then to have it all come crashing down, what was it like, you know? Well, anyways, on the first game, whatever.
Yeah, it was game one.
Yeah.
Second period.
Yeah. So 30 minutes into the whole thing just to, you know, kind of realize that it's all over now.
Yep.
And they gave him a good fight, but yeah, that was really disheartening.
So looking ahead now, what do you expect Montreal's 2015 to look like?
Well, I think you hinted at it earlier that, you know, it's not cup or bust for this team because the window's, you know, A, they're not amongst the elite of the league yet.
No, certainly
not. And B, the window's probably next year or the year after that. It's not like they have to win it this year, but this is one of the 7 or 8 best teams in the NHL. They're coming off a year where they made it to the Eastern Conference Final. They're on pace, I believe, to finish over 100 points yet again. I don't know what I expect it to look like. I don't think they're going to win the cup this year, but they're in the discussion, and I expect them to finish first or second in the division. I expect them to at least get to the second round of the playoffs. And, you know, I expect them to continue building, and I think when we start doing our preseason 2015-2016 preseason previews, you know, this is going to be a team that's going to be mentioned as one of the 5 or 6 best teams in the NHL going into next season.
Yep. I like that, but this to me is going to be a step back year in that we're not going to get to the conference final. It's a second round exit for Montreal this season. It's tough to do it. Exactly. I mean, great teams don't get there every year. And as we say, this is not quite a great team yet. It's a good team, and with Carey Price, anything can happen.
Yeah.
But I got to say, I think it's half step back in that it's a second round exit this season.
Especially with the way, I mean, it could have easily happened under the old format as well, but you know, when you got to fight your way out of that division, we're in a relatively tough division.
Yeah, it's not easy.
You know, if you have to play Tampa in the second round, like that's tough. I know you have to beat some good teams to get to the final, but that's a tough matchup. That's a tough draw.
Yeah, hell, certainly.
Boston, you know, if they play Boston in the first round, they might not get out of the first round.
That's fair.
Or Detroit, or, you know, even Toronto, maybe.
Maybe.
I think they're a better team than Toronto. They could lose to them.
Toronto may not make the playoffs now.
There's also that.
They are not looking good again.
Well, yeah.
Okay, first,
constantly refusing to play anything resembling defense is,
it hurts. I'm no coach, but I feel like you need to play some defense.
Well, they might be looking for a coach soon.
Okay, first round exit. What happens?
I
Because that's a big step
I don't
back.
Think Darian loses his job.
I wonder.
I mean, it depends on how you exit. If you get
if you get swept or
3-0 lead, maybe. But, you know, I think the expectation for this team is that they at least get to the second or third round, and the happy to be there aspect is gone. But at the same time, I think people recognize that the long-term trajectory of the team is arcing upwards. So it would be seen as a disappointment, but I don't think anyone cleans house if they're out in the first round.
No, the only danger would be that they might fire danger. Let's not to maybe the only advantage would be that they might fire Terrier. Even that, I don't think that happens.
It would take a pretty epic collapse, I think.
Yep, it definitely would. No, Terrier seems like he's going to be here at least. But I don't know if he finishes 2015 as the head coach.
Yeah, who knows? But, I mean, listen, for all the crap we give him, and I still don't think he's a great coach, his track record with Montreal is pretty hard to pick nits with at this point.
That's true.
And again, I think the team sort of succeeds in spite of him, not because of him for the most part. But, man, his track record's really, really good.
That it is.
I think he's earned himself, you know, sort of the benefit of the doubt for a stretch now.
How different will the
management, at least, if not with the fans?
Fair enough. How different do you think the roster is going to look over the course of next year? It looks very different than it did a year ago. Is it still going to undergo such a big change between now and 2016? I don't think so personally. I think this is starting to be it.
Right?
Pardon?
The core is locked in.
The core is locked in for sure.
So you tinker around the margins. There's enough cap space to maybe bring in that one extra piece, but you don't necessarily want to shoot your wad that early.
That's what they say.
That's what they tell me. I've been told that many, many times.
I know. Like, a lot of times.
That's one thing I wouldn't like to see the team do, though, is, you know, yeah, you're sort of knocking on the doorstep. Yeah, you have some cap space to play with. That doesn't mean you have to go out and, you know, give mediocre free agent X a $25 million contract because you think he's the guy who's going to get you over the hump.
Nope.
Keep a couple bullets in the chamber. The door is not closing. You know, the window is not closing next year.
Agreed.
And it is a crappy free agent class.
Yeah, you don't want to... Bergevin seems pretty smart about that, though.
He does. Yeah, I mean, it'd be one thing if there was a... I don't know. You know, if Parise was out there or something, and even him, I thought it got overpaid, but there's not even a player of that caliber.
No,
you don't want to do what St. Louis did and overpay for Stastny because you think you're a player away.
Exactly. That's the perfect example right there. The best thing to do on the free agent market is get the undervalue guys. That's where you build your third and fourth line to be the best in the league. But I actually think Montreal has a pretty substantial third and fourth line at the moment. I don't think that's where their issues lie at all.
No, unless it's an elite guy, don't overpay. Save that money and try and get PK to recruit Steve Stamkos in 2 years.
Also, I don't really want Bergevin signing free agents simply because his track record trading is so good. I just feel like he's going to build better through trades than he will free agents. And that's almost just trades and draft are a better way. You know, winning big trades or the right trades and drafting well, I think, does more for your franchise than signing free agents ever does. And that's a little bit surprising because you don't technically have to give up anything for a free agent where you got to give up something during a trade. But it just seems more often than not, the teams that trade well and draft well have success. And the teams that just consistently get the big names, those often come to haunt them a little.
Yeah, it's because you're signing guys when they're at the tail end of their prime or they're past their prime. It's a young man's game, and you're signing, you know, the nature of rookie contracts is you're not getting guys till they're 27, 28, 29.
It's a young man's game, just like podcasting.
God. It is not going to be a very exciting July 1st.
No.
I'm looking at the names of pending UFAs on CapGeek. Ugh.
What do we got? Give us a little...
Mike Green, Marty St. Louis.
Well, Mike Green, there's a guy who'll get overpaid by someone stupid.
Yeah. Edmonton? Sean Horkoff, Jagr, Paul Martin, Sergei Gonchar.
Sergei, he'll retire.
Eric Cole, Mike Fisher.
Jesus. That's a lot of has-beens.
Yeah, I mean, all these guys are you know, on the wrong side of 30. Mark Stahl is maybe the most interesting name out there.
That's boring.
Yeah, I mean, the Mark Stahl sweepstakes, I don't know if I'm turning into TSN all day for that.
Probably will, though.
I probably will.
Yeah, we'll probably watch it all go down.
Michael Ryder again. Is Michael Ryder a free agent every year?
He's a one-and-done guy now. But he feels like you should always add him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, Mark Mathot, he's nice.
He's nice, but like you say, yeah, again. Are you getting too excited about that?
Yeah, on the whole, probably not. Ugh. So yeah, I do not want to see the team because they have some cap space. And, you know, let's say the team gets the Eastern Conference final again.
Yeah.
And they think they're a player away. And they've got some cap space to play with. Like, I don't want them going out and signing Mike Fisher to a 3-year, $18 million deal just because they can.
I don't want Mike Fisher at all. I don't need Carrie Underwood watching the Habs. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think he's pretty happy in Nashville.
Well, like everyone. It's a great city. From that predicting to more predicting, here's what the road ahead has for the Habs. Friday, the day we're recording this, they're going to take on the much talked about in this podcast, New Jersey Devils. So we'll get to see the three-headed monster in action. And then David Perron. What's that?
Backup goalies in for the Devils, too.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
And then we got David Perron and the Pittsburgh Penguins on Saturday, back-to-backs. And then here's one that I'm looking forward to. This is a big one. Tampa Bay on Tuesday, 7:30. That's in Montreal. I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
And then it's Pittsburgh again. So outside of New Jersey, who are a weird kind of creature right now, you got two Pittsburghs and a Tampa Bay in there. Guess what? It's measuring stick time.
Yes. Yeah. Time to make up for that 7-1 loss.
Well, you lose all three to Pittsburgh and Tampa Bay. Sorry. There's still a bigger gap than we think.
Yeah, and the team's on a bit of a winning streak. It could just be that they're due for a couple of losses, but it would be unfortunate if those losses coincided with three games against, you know, the two best teams in the East.
As much as Pittsburgh are the probably the best team in the East, most people would agree, I'm more interested in the Tampa Bay game. I want to see how they come back after that embarrassment. Well, plus it's Tampa Bay, it's within the division, so it means a little bit more. I assume it will likely be with the division on the line.
Yeah, it looks that way, yeah.
Those are always fun. Usually we play them against Boston, but the Bruins, well, they've won a few, actually. They looked a little better as of late, but they had to do that at some point. They're chasing down the
Leafs now. Just last week we were saying, if they don't turn around now, almost, that it's kind of a lost season.
3 points back of the Leafs and 2 points back of the Rangers. I'm still talking myself into Boston and Toronto out.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right, so that's what we're looking at. Get bold. What's your BFP?
David Perron playing against his hometown team. Those types of players have a tendency to bury the dagger in Montreal. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to be so ecstatic that he's gone from, the pit of misery that is Edmonton.
It's hockey's asshole, let's be honest.
God, to go from Edmonton to Pittsburgh... Perron scores 3 goals in the 2 games against Montreal.
Okay. I like that. Bold, but I can see it happening. We've also gone for negatives in our predictions lately. I think it's after all our positive predictions came wrong. We've been better at getting the negative ones right somehow. Mine, it's bold. I would underline it as Lou Lamoriello bold. I say tonight, Friday night, Lamoriello starts 2 forwards, 2 defensemen, and 2 goalies against the Canadiens. He's thinking, he's thrown the box away. Completely new organization.
Not a bad idea.
Oh, my God. It's just, I had to read a couple articles to really even understand what they were doing in New Jersey.
Yeah. And, had he done this 10 years ago when they were on their run of a couple of cups, like maybe we'd all be
praising like, oh, as a genius move,
but yeah. I think he's lost a couple miles an hour off his fastball.
From bold, we go to our first Marchand of 2015. Who's your Marchand of the week, Sean?
Lou Lamoriello couldn't have waited a couple of days to...
Yeah, that's dicky. Come on.
To drop the axe.
Easy there, Scrooge.
I guess all like a day after Christmas is a bit better than a day before Christmas, but was that entirely necessary?
No, not at all. I mean, like, where are they going? Does he really need to get in there that quickly with his three-headed monster?
Yeah, I know. So,
his team can't wait another moment before it gets 3 coaches.
So, yeah, I'm not horribly offended by it, but Ebenezer Scrooge / Lou Lamoriello is my my Marchand of the Week.
Yep. All right. I'll take that. Mine is, so I read a lot of lists, as one does as a year comes to an end, and one of the things was in NHL circles, people giving their predictions for 2015, including who they thought would win the Vezina, who they thought was on the way for Hart, things like that. And Carey Price once again left off an astounding number of Vezina nominee lists.
Huh. Not Elliot Friedman's.
Well, Elliot Friedman's knows what Elliot Friedman's, that's what I call him, plural. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, but, he goes so far as to say that Price is the his Hart Trophy front runner.
The rest of the class seems to have Pekka not only as Vezina, but yeah, as the Hart leader.
Yeah, I don't really have too much of a problem with that, to be honest.
No, and I would say the same for, I mean, Hart, I don't know for Price, but you could almost maybe make the argument he's more valuable to Montreal than, for some reason, than, you know, Vezina, which makes no sense. Obviously, it's a stupid argument, but I could almost see him winning the Hart and not winning the Vezina, because, let's face it, Montreal's underlying number is not fantastic. Not even good, really. But Carey Price, a lot of the times you'll see, you know, a team whose underlying numbers aren't great, and you expect them to fall off a cliff. I don't know that I expect that from the Habs. Why? Because what Carey Price does is sustainable. This isn't as if Carey Price is having, you know, he's having a great season, but it's not as if he's playing out of his mind to the point you're going, well, you know, he can't keep playing like this. Carey Price, yeah, he can keep playing like this. He probably will.
Yeah, the one thing that fancy stats haven't quite captured yet is the impact that goalies have on the game.
They seem to argue
they
don't.
The impact that elite goalies have on the game.
I would say elite goalies, because there's so few of them, so it makes sense. I mean, what you're doing with statistics like that is looking for general rules. For how things play out. There's so few goalies who are consistently very, very good that they are, you know, they are the exception to the rule. And I think that's the case of Carey Price, is he's the exception to the rule. There's a few guys in the league who can do that.
Yep, and I think, let's give him some credit. I think Tarnier recognizes that, and that's part of the reason that the team is run in the frustrating way that it is.
Well, they played a very different hockey game against the Florida Panthers. And Florida's like, I think a lot of people think Florida's a really bad team this year. They're not so, Florida's, they're okay. I wouldn't go far as to say they're good, but they're an okay team. And with Tkachuk in the Nets, the team certainly didn't lean on the goalie nearly as much as they do with Price. I mean, they can play a different brand of hockey when it's not Price between the net.
Yeah, they can.
And we saw in the playoffs last year. I mean, that was a completely different style of hockey that they played once they got to the playoffs last season than what they did through the regular season. I say this a lot, but I do suspect that, as you say, Terrier knows that Price is going to win you more games than you should playing the way they're playing. But you're going to get those wins because you got Carey Price, and then in the playoffs, you know, you can take it up that extra gear, and you don't have to have the guys going 100%, you know, just through the entirety of the season. You don't play a passive game, but something more similar to a passive game, whereas, you know, you then take it to your opposition once you get into the playoffs, and once the part of the season that really matters for the Canadiens now. They're not a team looking to just get in the playoffs. This is a team that has aspirations, and Price is a big, big part of that, and as you say, I think Terry recognizes that, and it is a reflection of why perhaps they don't play the most impressive downhill hockey.
We all kind of forgot about Pecorini, eh?
Yep.
We all forgot that he's really good.
Like, from him being in everybody's best goalies in the NHL list, what, two seasons ago? And then we kind of, one week season, we write him off.
Yeah, where he was injured.
Yeah. We're jerks is the moral of that story.
He's pretty damn good.
But anyone keeping Price off their list, just watch the Canadiens play. Tell me he's not one of the three best goalies in the NHL right now.
Yeah, that I have trouble with as well.
And now, the best that we had since we last cast. I got 3 stars. What do you got?
I have a sort of vague highlight.
Good job. That's what the people download for. More vague highlights after this. I would watch vague highlights. And this guy passes. Yeah. Is that a goal? It looks like he scores for him. What's his? Bob Cole kind of gives vague highlights sometimes. Vague play-by-play with Bob Cole. Vague, but very excited. I got 3 stars. My 3rd star has to go to Patrick Kaleta, who somehow punched himself in the face during a fight.
Good call, good call.
He couldn't explain it either. And I don't know how... I don't know how one would explain punching yourself. I mean, I guess the adrenaline was going for Patrick Kaleta. Number two, one of my favorite hockey moments of the week, Team Denmark for getting that win. Mad Zeller and company. That was a really fun game to watch, and never thought I'd be such a fan of the Danish hockey team for a game, but I was really in their corner. And my first star, Jiří Sikáč, who's he's broken out, and that one goal that he scored after the penalty comes out of the box, and I guess he'd been watching Nyquist highlights from the previous evening because he tried a little bit of his own where he just held onto the puck until he decided to deposit it in the back of the net. It was great stuff.
My highlight has been watching Zach Fucali in the World Juniors.
Yes, eh?
And, you know, like we said, sometimes you have to take these things with a grain of salt, but this is a guy who's pretty highly touted, mm-hmm. and it'll just be interesting to see what the organization decides to do with him, because obviously they're pretty set in goals. You dangle him as trade bait. Is there enough of an age gap there that you can sort of bring him along and have him be the successor? I mean, that's a conversation for another time, but he's been very, very impressive. And he sort of validated everything we thought about him when he was picked a couple years ago.
And sticking with the guys who play in the blue paint, Carey Price will start his 400th game as a Hab against New Jersey. And seeing some of the list, that's another one of my, in the vague highlight department, just looking at some of those all-time Habs records lists, and I know Carey Price has the advantage of playing 82 games a year versus, you know, 50 back in the day, but he's rocketed right up to top three in most categories now for the all-time Habs goalie list. And, you know, 26 years old, a long ways to go. He's going to finish right up there with all the records will belong to Plante, Roy, and Price, it seems, by the end of things. Because he still feels relatively new on top of that.
He does. I know. It's crazy. This is his
8th season, I believe?
Yeah.
Well, he's not that new. I mean, you know,
no, he's not.
We've come a long way from the Halak v. Price debate. That's nice.
Yeah, I think we can finally bury that one.
I think we said that enough now. I think we need to burying it at this point. Well,
Halak's been good this year.
Yeah, and, you know, Montreal, New York Islanders, Eastern Conference Final. Guess what debate's back?
Yeah, no kidding.
That could easily happen.
Yep. Yes, it could.
Oh, that would be... I mean, it would be great if Price came out on top of that one. Yeah, but it would mostly be insufferable if they lost that. But that's looking way ahead to something that might very, you know, not extremely remote, but still pretty remote. So we won't hang around that. 2015. Feel good?
Like I said, so far so good.
So far, I guess you'd like to judge on what's happened. That's the way to go. I'm excited. For the podcast, for the Canadians, as we say, rabbithabs.com, you can find the forum on there now, but I think it's going to be another good year of hockey watching. Non-Habs-related highlight, that gold medal in there wasn't too bad either.
Yeah, no, God, that team was good.
The team was almost boring good, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, if you want to highlight,
that's how I describe this podcast, boring good.
So consistently amazing that it's
dull.
Almost kind of dull.
Like you don't even want to listen anymore.
That the women's gold medal game might have been the most exciting game I've ever seen in my life.
That was a hell of a game.
That was ridiculous.
The women have had some. I mean, let's not take anything away from the Vancouver gold, but the women have had some fantastic gold medal games.
Yep. Yeah, they really have.
Maybe we'll get a gold medal come from the juniors. I mean, it's not out of the question.
It'd be nice, yeah. I'm trying to. It's been a while since we've had held all three golds simultaneously.
Deserve it, damn it. So that'll do it. That's the first of 2015. It's in the
not
books.
Bad. It's
thanks,
in the books.
Thanks everybody for downloading as per usual. Found out while I was back home. Got some friends and family who listen to the podcast that I had no idea. So to all of them, thank you.
Yeah.
I didn't know anyone. Had any idea what I did? Was trying to keep it that way. We'll see.
I don't have friends or family, so
no. I didn't. I was trying not to bring that up. Sean fell to this planet. And on that note, we're out of here. Have a good night.